overestimating our adversary.
Over the years, I've read a wide variety of stories that purport to support the notion that Christians can be demon-possessed. In the end, they all have one thing in common. They greatly overestimate the power and province of Satan. Some deliverance ministers make a more valiant attempt than others to provide a biblical basis for the contention that Satan can possess believers. Inevitably, however, their experiences and stories overshadow their exegesis of Scripture. In The Bondage Breaker, Dr. Neil Anderson uses in excess of 75 sometimes shocking stories to demonstrate that 85% of all believers are ensnared in some level of satanic bondage. Likewise, in Three Crucial Questions on Spiritual Warfare, Dr. Arnold seeks to answer the question, can a Christian be demon-possessed, by leading off with three extraordinary stories. In addition to a slightly more dramatic version of Edmund Fabian's murder, he employs the story of a woman named Janet, who was pinned down and sexually violated by a demon, as well as the story of a man named Mark, whose marriage was marvelously saved by Christ, but whose demon of rage still causes him to fly off the handle virtually every time he gets into an argument with his wife. What such stories have in common is that they vastly overrate Satan's power and authority. Sexual demons are the stuff of medieval mythology, and men like Mark need to come to grips with the reality that the devil made me do it is little more than a convenient cop-out for sin. While it's become fashionable to credit the devil with every temptation we face, we must be ever mindful that spiritual warfare involves the world and the flesh as well. As Paul makes clear in his letter to the Ephesians, we are often defeated in spiritual warfare because we follow the ways of this world and the cravings of our sinful nature. To suggest that a person can be controlled against their will to such an extent that they murder a fellow believer is the quintessential example of overestimating our adversary. Likewise, the notion that a demon can bite, scrawl on a fogged-up mirror, or sexually violate a human being has more in common with Greek mythology than a Christian worldview. Concocting demons of lust, demons of drugs, or demons of rage is at best an example of misplaced emphasis, and at worst, an illustration of how the devil made me do it has become an all-too-prevalent theology of a Christian subculture desperately searching for scapegoats. In sharp contrast, Christian theology precludes the possibility of Christians being controlled against their wills through demonization. Thus, when Jesus taught his disciples to pray, "And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one," he underscored temptation rather than demonization as the means by which the evil one entices us. While deliverance devotees credit the devil for murderous motivations, sexual sensations, and rampant rage, Christ makes it clear that evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander, and a host of other besetting sins spring out of the heart. The words of the Master echo back through the corridors of time with prophetic poignancy. The good man brings good things out of the good stored up in his heart, and the evil man brings evil things out of the evil stored up in his heart. For out of the overflow of his heart, his mouth speaks. Thus, before the Apostle Paul launches into the covering that is our protection in the invisible war, he first warns believers against overestimating the power of Satan by supposing that he can possess and control us against our wills. The proper perspective on spiritual warfare is focused on the power of God rather than the ploys of Satan. Says Paul, "Be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes." While our enemy, the devil, prowls around like a lion looking for someone to devour, He is, after all, a lion on a leash, the length of which is determined by the Lord.